called Don't Bang the Table. My name is Alex, and I'm an alcoholic and a drug addict. And I identify with both, and I say both for, you know, specific reasons as I've come into these rooms and sort of traveled through the ones and their various rules for each room. I just find it, like, more comforting to me to identify as both, because most of my experience and most of the experience of the people I've known is, you know, pretty heavily cross-addicted, as they call it. So I guess it's what it was like, what happened, what it's like now. What it was like, I grew up in a situation that was beautiful, chaotic, without the alcohol necessarily, but definitely with the isms. My parents did a lot of drugs. My father was a drug trafficker. My mother was just sort of like a beautiful, bohemian, eccentric artist. She was also mentally ill, bipolar one. And both my parents had this very whirlwind, romantic, glorifying any kind of illegal activity life. We had, up until I was like 5 or 6, we had stretch limos picking us up from airports. They looked to me, and when I even look at pictures of them now, they looked like epic cinematic icons. But, you know, that was in pictures, and they loved me very, very much, but they lived in a world entirely built on chaos. And so I remember drinking. You know, my mother traveled with us around Europe a lot, and especially when my father eventually was in jail. And, you know, drinking wine was normal for kids at dinner. I remember looking at them at my brother's bar mitzvah. And once the kids had all gone to sleep, or we were sort of like drowsy and been put to bed on a chair somewhere, all the adults were partying. And it looked really beautiful and really kind of exciting. And that whole world, I thought, you know, the smoking of the joint, or it just came with a glass of wine. That was in the painting, that was in the picture, that was in the film. That's just what it was. And, I kind of grew up with that ideal as what life should be and how everyone else was just normal. And we were some kind of like exceptional, special gypsy tribe. But, you know, my dad went to jail. My mom was in and out of mental hospitals. And when the money eventually ran out, it got really dark when I was a teenager. And, sort of justified it in my mind is that, like, those heightened senses of joy were paid for by these really low lows, and that if you didn't understand how to communicate with somebody at their lowest point, rambling in the dark, or if you weren't willing to, like, get into the delusion with them, then you just didn't know what real life was like or something like that. The depression and madness and lunacy and poverty was the price for these amazing times we had, and my mother would tell me that. And, you know, there would be nights that she would keep me awake all night with coffee and cry while my parents were going through a divorce. And this is sort of the situation I grew up in. And not to discount the fact that it was really beautiful. I mean, it was like, we're going with the last of the money to Spain, and then there we were in Spain. Or we have to go see the Berlin Wall come down, and so there we were. And there was no lack of, like, love in my household. Around the time I was a teenager, I would definitely say that by the time I was 16, I had, if it even means anything, but I had earned my seat in these rooms. And it still took me, whatever, till I was 33 to get in here, 32. I did a lot of drugs when I was a teenager. I started, my first joint was when I was 12. I guess the first time I did coke, I was 13. First time I sold coke, I was 14. First time I did acid, I was 13. I'd done every single drug, except maybe like the ones that were invented later by Big Pharma, like Klonopin or whatever. I had done every single drug that was around then by the time I was 16. I'd shot coke. I wasn't a big fan of shooting coke. I liked to smoke it or snort it. I'd tried heroin, but it made me throw up too much, thank God. I drank Old English before school, took acid at school. I went to LaGuardia High School. It was like artsy. Eventually, I went to City Az High School, and if anyone knows it, that's like the school where you end up, which was actually pretty good for me. Like, they saved my life. I calmed down. I didn't get sober, but I calmed down a considerable amount and found, like, a passion and found filmmaking. And eventually, entering into the world of film, you know, I found kind of an industry that supported my habits, you know. I could work 20 hours a day. I could do a budget while standing on my head and building a set at the same time. And all thanks to coke, Adderall, and any other kind of amphetamine I could get my hands on at work. Drinking throughout the day to not appear geeked out. But, you know, doing a really good job. And, you know, I went on like this and life was normal. Ish. You know, I had some, like, weird sex stuff that happened when I was a young teenager. I was kind of, like, consensually, not consensually, passed around by an older female family member. And then when I kind of figured out that it wasn't this, like, unique Kundera-esque intellectual thing that was happening, when I found out it was sort of, like, a joke, I got really angry, got in a lot of fights, was really happy about being tough. I was really happy about getting into physical altercations. Was really, really happy when I could hurt another person. That just, you know, continued until I got sober, like around 7 months ago. And I still deal with that a little bit. But yeah, I mean, finding film and having a job and having not just a job but a career as young as I was, 19, 20, 21, really, you know, was able to mask a lot of the addiction. I wasn't like I was when I was a teenager, and I wasn't a friend who's like dying from overdosing. You know, I was just doing drugs every single day, and I can't really remember the last time I went more than maybe 5 to 7 days without a drug since I was, I'd say, 13, because that was started the weed every day and the drinking every day. And so it's like a big surprise these months of not having anything, not having any off switch. I was engaged with someone that I had kind of been on and off with since I was 14. He was in the Army. He did 2 tours. We had a codependent, tumultuous relationship, but we knew each other very well. He was a really stand-up. He is a really stand-up person. He got back from war, PTSD, et cetera. I was 26. We decided that, you know, we should end it. He needed time. He was going through it. And when that happened, that was such a solid plan for me. Like, okay, I have everything settled. No matter what I do right now, I will get married. I will have a house. I will have kids. But when that sort of dissolved, I almost had permission to really just, my career was in a place where I was always going to get hired no matter what. I didn't even have to fight for it anymore. I didn't have to hustle anymore. I didn't have to impress anyone anymore. I had an agent. I was going to get work. I knew how to hide my addiction and work. But when that happened, when like my future sort of dissolved, I really just went like bottoms up. Alcohol every night to the point of blackout drinking. I mean, that was always kind of going on special occasions than just drinking every day, but this was just every night. I had boyfriend after boyfriend, one of whom's younger brother was addicted to Oxycontin, and we decided we were going to get him sober because we didn't do Oxycontin. We just did a lot of coke and smoked a lot of weed and drank every day. So he lived in my house for a couple months and then ended up just not being able to make it and shooting up oxys one night and just, I guess, misjudging the dosage and overdosing in my apartment. And that was pretty intense. That started, like, what became, you know, the final down. In a weird twist of symmetry, my own brother committed suicide. He's paranoid schizophrenic. 2 years ago, in New York, in Queens, via the F train, and that again started a pretty sharp cliff down. 2 weeks after, I guess the first time I really started considering drugs possibly being a problem was that 2 weeks after my brother committed suicide, I found out I was pregnant, and I was 30, I was 30 years, 31, and, you know, it's that time where you should be like, okay, I can do this, you know. It's not like I didn't have any money. I was dealing drugs on the side, selling weed to, you know, people on film sets, and I made a shit ton of money all the time. So where it was all going, I mean, I've looked at bank receipts since, and it's going on cabs, $400 withdrawal from ATMs, $200 bills at the bar. I mean, it was just going. I definitely didn't make that much money, but I was spending money like that. Mm-hmm. So I had no money. Something wasn't computing. I should have been able to do it, but I wasn't. And not only was I not able to do it because I was in no financial situation or emotional situation, I wasn't able to do it also because I had been consistently doing cocaine, especially since my brother died, because that was like the big excuse. Probably about an 8-ball a night until I found out. And it was a big eye-opener for me when I talked to the social worker, saying just, like, I can't do that. I mean, it's probably all fucked up, you know, at this point. And just realizing that drugs might be a bit of an issue. Still didn't really do anything about it. My closest friends were the friends I had outside of work, where I would hide away and, like, hang out with them all night, just doing massive amounts of blow. And I got arrested at the airport because I forgot that I had a giant knife in my bag on my first shoot, like my first shoot with Vice. I was going to Detroit, and that would have even been okay. They probably would have just kept me in waiting for a little while and tisk me if I hadn't had 4 open warrants. This is just not the kind of thing you forget about to deal with when you're sober generally. So that happened. I was in the bullpen. I end up getting out. And a friend of mine who I went to high school with, who I had seen off and on over the years, we were walking on the High Line. We occasionally hung out, or I occasionally would text him at 5 in the morning saying, like, I have anxiety. I really want to kill myself. And he would be like, are you doing any drugs lately? And I'd be like, no, I haven't done drugs for months. I don't know what you're talking about. And he's like, okay, let's just say that's true. What do you think you're feeling anxious about? But he never, it must have been the longest 12-step in the world. So finally, after I told him about my month and the last year and all the things I was feeling, I also had a considerable amount of guns and firearms in my house, one of which I would like to hold my head and say, just do it, you know, you're a pussy if you can't do it. So you should just fucking kill yourself, you're a piece of shit. And no, you can't. So, like, not only hating myself to the point where I wanted to die, but also hating myself for being too much of a quote-unquote coward to pull the trigger. And I would go on dates, even with, like, people with jobs and things, and they would order coke, and I'd be like, yes, they're just like me. And, you know, instead of dealing with the date properly and, you know, saying goodnight, I would be like, I gotta go home, because I was so afraid of the coke keeping me awake, I would just stuff my face with pills. A couple nights I took too many. One night I ended up waking up out of a blackout on, like, house in an A, ambulance coming, is there pee on me? Probably. There's definitely throw up. I finally kind of fess up to my friend, and I'm telling him about the month that I had, and he said, look, I've never just said it, but, you know, what would be so fucking bad about doing 90 days, you know? And I was just like, that's ridiculous. That is, in my mind, that is ridiculous. And what is it going to change? I'm a piece of shit. Everyone I know is dead or dying. And I can't, no, something else is wrong. And he said, you know what, forget it. Forget I said anything. Don't do it, because if you do it and then you go out, you know, it's going to be worse and you're going to die and I love you. So just forget it. Forget I said anything. I was like, fuck that, dude. So later that night, I went to Midnight, and I had always known about it. I live in the neighborhood and it's a really good meeting. And then I went the next day, and within 36 hours, I started understanding that there was a physical detoxification going on, which really kind of was a wake-up call for me that I was on so many benzos, coke, alcohol. I mean, I honestly don't know what was making me have massive amounts of, like, sweats, diarrhea, and vomiting during the detox period, but it could have been any number of things. And I called a friend of mine who I knew was in the rooms, and she was on vacation, but she had group texted me with one of her friends who happened to have just gone through a breakup and was sharing at Midnight. And she looked at me and she said, you know, are you Alex? Bea told me about you. And it was like day three, and I was like, oh, get away from me. I don't know you. And she said, do you want a sponsor? I'm like, come on, man, like, just fuck off. And she goes, well, do you know what, like, an interim sponsor is? You know, just, do you want to call me tomorrow? And I was like, okay. And I had, like, broken all the little capillaries around my eyes. And so I called her, and she's still my sponsor, and she's pretty awesome because, like, I would agree to do things with her, and then I would call her up and be like, I'm not doing this. I don't know you. I'm not doing this. And she would be like, okay. And then now, you know, we read the book together, we do all the stuff, and she's really, really there for me. And not as like a therapist and not as like a blanket, but as a human being, a solid human being with a solid program that has like what I want. Just no matter what happens in her life, she's got something. And she's got peace. And I certainly don't have peace yet, but I'm on the fourth step now, so soon. Maybe. But, you know, it's been a lot. I hung out with a bunch of my friends for a long time, friends I've had for 10 years, and I couldn't really hang anymore. This week, a really, really close friend of mine, I mean, probably, I had two running buddies towards the end, you know, and they were girlfriend and boyfriend, and then husband and wife, and they owned a shop, and they were always there for, as soon as my brother died, it was like, you don't have to pay for a thing, Alex. Here's anything you need. And they were trying to be helpful. And this one kid, like, you know, he really loved his friends. And on Monday, you know, 27 years old, having just inherited like a shit ton of money a year and a half ago, broke and alone, he went into cardiac arrest. And was left there before the people that were with him called the ambulance. They wanted to make sure, I imagine, that they weren't going to catch a drug charge or a gun charge or whatever. And his wife, it was the first time we'd spoken in, like, maybe a month, because it's scary when someone gets sober, you know, and I left the party. So it's kind of like I left this person alone who, I mean, we hung out every day, all day, for years, and I couldn't hang anymore, and it wasn't the same. And she just texted, I was qualifying at 96th Street Workshop, and she just texted me, emergency, you know, and I went out to Woodall. This person's, another relative of this person is in the rooms, and so it was a very strange, I was faced with a very strange, like, duplicitous situation where, in the one hand, my new friend, who I wanted to be there for and support, and she's sober and she needs me because she's, like, fucking all over the place, and my running buddy, and, like, it made me think, like, what does loyalty mean? Mm-hmm. And what is loyalty? Like, being sober, staying sober? Because as soon as we left that hospital, as soon as we identified the body and we left that hospital, I was with the group straight to the bar, And it was just like Jameson everywhere, whatever everywhere. And it would have taken 1 second. I've been insulated for the last 7 months. And in 1 second, I thought, I'm not going to pick up. That's ridiculous. And then I'm like, oh, yeah, I am. I'm going to pick up right now. I got to go. And but that's like, I wouldn't have left back then. I mean, since I've been in the program, I don't want to die, which is ridiculous. Because I feel like I've wanted to die since I was 20. I used to joke that I was born tired in some kind of, like, weird sense of that sort of tough and cool to say. And, you know, and I'm not tired, and I have hope, which is pretty ridiculous. And when this kid, you know, he came around midnight once or twice, and he didn't have any hope, and he didn't see a way out. And it's so weird when you're in it and you think anything else is going to happen except maybe just put down the substances that are actually causing chemicals in your brain to make you want to kill yourself. You think anything else might be a solution. Let me go somewhere. Let me take a vacation. Let me go visit my mom who's having a mental breakdown in California. At least I'll get some sun. Anything else. You know, within 5 minutes of being in another state, I can find any drug or a bar, which is pretty easy. But I mean, hope was like not an option. It wasn't even real, especially after my brother died. And even now, I watch someone walk through sobriety and stay sober when her brother just died. And I watch the difference. And I watch someone sinking further and further away from any solution and somebody just struggling to hold on to it. And she said to me, she asked me, like, well, what was your experience when your brother passed? And I was like, I can't even tell you that because, like, I did exactly the other thing that you're supposed to do. I had a bunch of coke. I didn't sleep for weeks. Then somehow I was pregnant. Then that happened. Then there was more coke. And, like, there was a lot of whiskey every day, morning drinking. And she said, no, that's what I need to hear. I need to hear how miserable it was. I was like, well, it was miserable enough for me to end up at midnight. And it was great. And the people I've met there have saved my life. And in AA, in general. I hide out at midnight, I'm not going to lie. But, like, the people there have saved my life. The friends I've made there, the 3 a.m. calls, the, oh, my God, it's Thanksgiving. And I used to suck the Whippet juice out of the whipped cream can. Could somebody talk to me on the phone while I, like, pour out all the whipped cream or spray it all out? I mean, just, like, stupid shit that you'd be embarrassed about. I wish I had come in earlier. I wish I had come in at 16, 17, 18, any time, but I'm glad that I came in before I died. Because I'm like, I want to see what this life looks like on this side. It's getting a little, like, beautiful maybe. So we'll see. And I want to hear from you guys. Thank you for listening.